report. Before we start, Jerry, are there any apologies?
Chair, the only one I've received, it was from Mr. Foss. That is the only one, Chair. Yes.
Mr. Foss will be leaving at 10, so he's with us and he'll be leaving at 10. I'm sure you've seen that Honorable Makhubela was here, but she's since received the news that her husband was involved in a car accident and the car rolled. He is now on his way to the hospital in the ambulance. DG and the department, good morning. If there is anybody we don't know from your team, can you introduce them? But the people you are sitting with in front, we know them. So they're part of the furniture. Then after that, you can shoot. But before you shoot, you tell us, why do you have an 88 million underspending or money not spent? Can you just tell us? But your program three, for the first time, did better than throughout all the years prior to 2017. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm glad, Honorable Chairperson, that you started by saying the rest are part of the furniture, which shows stability in the organization. So we are happy about that. Honorable Chairperson, you have received also apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister. There was a clash with prior commitments in the programs, some which involved third parties beyond our control. And there are people that, Honorable Chairperson, you do not know in the midst. We have two intents that we brought today, the two ladies behind me. The first one is Malebo Nyapili, who's interning with us around issues of risk management. And the second intern is Ms. Zamisa, no, Zimasa. It's Ms. Zimasa Mwangu, who is interning with us under internal audit. So we thought we should try and bring them here also to just understand when we're talking about accountability, because these are issues that they are intending on. What does it mean? What does it look like in practice and so on? But it's part of a broader program where we try to expose our interns to a number of areas. We are now going to be taking them also to specific areas such as attending executive planning sessions, so that they just, by the time they leave, at least we hope they will be prepared for the job market in the areas that they're doing their work.
Sorry, DG, before you proceed, there's somebody at the back. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Kwa Leolu Akemi. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, before I even go to anything else, I will try and just provide a bit of clarity on the matter that you raised up front with regards to the 88 million. It comprises of two parts. It comprises of 53 million, which is under the TIP, and it also has the 35 or so million that is under EPWP. So I'll start with the EPWP part. The EPWP part, as we reported, second and third quarter, due to the processes that we were undertaking around the review of the project that we had to stop due to the issues pertaining to their execution, we were aware that we were not going to be able to meet the EPWP targets for that particular financial year. Now, in that process, when you meet the targets at a particular time, you get, in inverted commas, an additional appropriation. It comes from the beginning, but you earn it on the basis of performance against the targets. So that 35 would have earned it if we had met the targets. But if we have not met the targets, it does not even become ours. It is not earned. So it was not necessarily money that is with us that we did not necessarily spend. It related to meeting of targets of EPWP. So when you meet the targets, you exceed the targets, you keep getting additional money. And you could actually sometimes even go beyond appropriation, if one could put it that way, but not necessarily as an over expenditure. But it is there because you would have actually done the targets and exceeded the targets. On the part of the TIP, the money was appropriated for purposes of the projects that we're doing in Skokuza, and it relates to part of it is the greening of the facilities and so on. So we had significant delays with regards to processes of authorization for the particular, to start with putting in place the facilities that we wanted to do. But this relates to the fact that on site we found certain species, plant species, that we were not able to actually remove. So you have a site as big as this room, for instance, and you are the place that you had identified that this mini plant or mini grid would be happens to be in the middle here, and you find that particular species in that space. So there are two options. First option is that you remove the plant and then go ahead with the project. But in terms of the classification of protected and threatened species, this particular plant cannot be removed. We have got to actually find ways around that particular plant. So in moving out of that, then you go around it, you find other plants. They are not necessarily as threatened as this particular one, and you cannot remove those as well. Then you have got to move a little bit further. The more you move a little bit further, the design completely changes, because now you probably will have to have four mini sites around that actually combined would then form one site. It means the technical specifications would significantly shift as well. But even the requirements in terms of the storage facility for the energy and so on would also be affected. So that was what we were actually struggling with. And as we then move on and we said, okay, what are the other possible places in and around the same area? Then you find that there are other trees that are much taller that would actually have shade right on top of the panels. And it means the level of exposure and the level of performance would then be affected. So technical people had to deal with this, and these are the things that they were actually trying to sort out. And this is what led to the situation that we then reported that we were not going to be able to actually finalize this. And we looked at it and we said, we can't take money that we know for a fact that it is actually appropriated for a particular reason and go and use it for the sake of using it so that we could actually end up with 100% expenditure and so on. So we then did request a rollover with National Treasury. Of course, the current fiscal environment is not necessarily what it would have been last year. So that would be the decisions that they will make ultimately. But internally, we are looking at, in the manner of prioritization and so on, how best can we, from whatever savings that we can make, still be able to meet whatever we had originally set to achieve within the confines of what we've got. But partners will also have to come on board so that we're able to do that. Having said that, I would like also to say, Honorable Chairperson, we collectively we've said in areas where we have not achieved something, and it so happens that there was a third party involved as a partner, that responsibility is not with the third party, it's with us. So that we're just clear about that. In any and every case where a third party needed to do something but they did not necessarily do it, we have a responsibility to manage those partnerships. So if we didn't do it right in a particular instance and we have lessons that we must apply going forward, that's okay. But we need to take a fair share of the responsibility. They too will, because in some of these instances they have these things in their own plans. They too will when they appear before their oversight mechanisms. But we will have to take responsibility for ours. In this
Sorry,
plan.
DG. We're giving you up to 10 presentations. Thank you. The whole team.
The whole team. So I've covered the issue about the financials. Quarter four always coincides, Honorable Chairperson, with end of the year. So it's always a difficult balancing act to speak to the quarter without speaking to the year. We will try as much as possible to do that, but we would like to share with yourself, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, that we tabled yesterday our annual report. The entire portfolio, that is the National Department and South African Tourism, we have got clean audits with no matters. On the part of the department, we of course we had a year where we were doing quite a lot of things. We were finalizing the restructuring of the department on the one hand, but we were also making sure that we are supposed to be delivering and achieving on what we had planned originally. So the things that we had planned overall, we achieved about, and this is not for the quarter four, this is for the year, we achieved about 89% of all the things that we had planned to do. We also received very good feedback with regards to the ratings that are done by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. Planning, which indicates that we are just short of 85% in terms of our ratings around what they call management assessment tool, which allows to, they call it MPET, performance assessment tool, which allows for earlier indications of the governance controls and all that within the organization prior to even AG coming into the picture. So there are some good indications that significant progress has indeed been made. And as they present in some instances, they will be able to tell you some stories about people who have benefited in one way or another. There is a clear indication that, as an example, the executive development program for women that we started is now starting to bear fruits. About four big enterprises, the large enterprises, in fact groups, four of the participants in those programs have actually now progressed to general manager status. So there is real progress that we are actually seeing, and we believe that as we do these small contributions, they would go a long way in terms of actually bringing the contribution. Of course, you must have already heard about the year that was with regards to the tourist arrivals and so on. We will still come back here, Honorable Chairperson, for that year. So I will stop at that for that year. We had good progress with regards to quarter four in comparison with quarter three, where we were in the 60s and we have moved into the 80s. And we really finalized quite a number of issues. The issues that we had not been able to finalize, we will give the details around that. So I want to stop at that and allow the DDGs so that they can go through the presentation so that we have sufficient time for questions. Thank you.
Maybe let's start from the end. my presentation to here. That's a program. Okay. The last program. All right. No, I was saying in terms of numbers, but you did do as you wish.
Okay. We can finish with problem one. So that in case time pressure can be happening, because there are no issues largely in the problem.
When I got to program two. Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Program 2 is Policy and Knowledge Services. In the year under review for quarter 4, we had 18 targets, 15 of which were met and 3 which were not met. The first target that we didn't achieve, yes, relates to slide 28, which is the National Tourism Information Management System. We embarked on very extensive consultations in this period about the National Tourism Information Management System. It is going to be the system that collects information about the entire tourism sector. And so in this time, we consolidated the inputs from industry in terms of the questions that they had, and we also actually looked at the various types of tools we could put into place. What wasn't done was that we didn't promulgate the regulations, because we thought that following our consultation process, promulgation of the regulations at that stage would be premature. The regulations have subsequently been finalized, and I think they're in their final draft, which will soon be published for public comment. The next target that we didn't achieve is on slide 30, if we could go to that slide. It is related to the baseline study for the transformation codes. So as members will be aware, tourism was the first sector to actually align to the new codes. We do have a baseline study on the previous codes and the targets that were achieved against that. But this is really a study that looks at how the industry is doing against the new codes that were published about a year ago. And in terms of this study, we delayed our process in order to properly revisit the methodology and also to look at the governance structure, because the study itself informs the work of the Charter Council, and our Charter Council was in place on the 30th of June. That was when the appointment was effective. So we did a lot of work to actually make sure that we had the correct methodology and we were cleaning our databases and reaching the right people. The next targets, actually, that we didn't achieve were related to two projects that are about enhancement of tourism products, and they're on slides 36 to 38, so if we can go to slide 36. They are Shangoni Gate, and they are for the Palaboa Wild Activity Hub. And these projects were meant to have begun with construction by the end of the financial year. There were delays actually related to the EIA processes, and construction had not yet commenced at both those sites at that point in time. But subsequent to that, construction has in fact commenced at one of the sites, and the EIA for the other site is being finalized. I think I will stop there and hand over to Anami.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm going to talk about the International Tourism Management Program, Program 3, and I'm going to follow on to what Shamila did in highlighting the areas that were not achieved. Just a summary, Honourable Members, the program for quarter 4 had 10 targets, of which 9 were achieved and 1 was not achieved. And that slide I'm going to say now is slide 53. This target relates to the rollout of the visa facilitation centers. Our quarter four target was the monitoring of the implementation of the rollout. Honorable Chair, you might recall that in the previous quarter we did indicate that the program was implemented in China, and up to now it proved to be very successful. The fact that the visa were waived for Russia, we had a visa waiver for Russia, made it unnecessary to implement the program in Russia. And in India and Africa, on close examination on the issues that were experienced on the ground, it was clear that it was not around the application process and that the visa facilitation centers will not improve the situation. So the decision was made not to roll out ATC, the ATC program in India and Africa at the moment. And that's for that reason that that target was therefore not achieved. And that was the only one. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Councillors. Thank you, Chair, for members of Parliament. I used to be in a municipality. I'm going to present on Program 4. Which we used to call domestic tourism management. In the past year, we had 20 targets. Out of those 20 targets, we were able to achieve 16. Three, we managed to do reasonable work towards, and which we were able to achieve at the end of the financial year. We had one which we didn't achieve, which is on the EPWP, and the DG has already indicated the reasons of why we didn't achieve those full-time equivalents. The targets where we were able to do reasonable work were around the capacity building program. It was in question of the workshops that we expected to have should have held around quarter three, but were taken over to quarter four. But by the end of the year, we were able to have achieved those. That's basically in terms of the program for the targets. And we also had a target around the tourism human resource development strategy. By the end of the quarter four, we were supposed to have already engaged the public in terms of what was coming out of the strategy. We didn't manage to do that, but the work was completed in terms of the strategy. And we indicated that we'll do that in the next financial year. Thank you, Chair.
You could also indicate the slides where they are, as they are explaining. We're a bit lost on program number four.
Excuse me for that. On the full-time equivalent is slide 72, and on the capacity building is slide 64. And the slide 72 also encompasses all the training programs where we have indicated that the numbers we didn't achieve in quarter four, but by the end of the year we have managed to have the numbers in terms of the training programs.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm going to just touch briefly on Program 1, Administration. We saw an improvement from Quarter 3 where we achieved 84% of our targets, and in the fourth quarter we actually had an issue. We almost had full achievement except for the issue around the Tourism Amendment Bill. Members will recall that the draft amendments were approved in 2016-17. However, we did not submit those amendments to cabinet due to the fact that we wanted to conduct a policy review to study the impact of the sharing economy, and then the outcome of that review would then inform whether there'd be further amendments to be made to the Tourism Act. And I will speak more to it when I get to quarter one. This will be on KPI 13, I believe slide number 22.
Gigi, where is the person who should be giving us information on finances? Or you are going to do so?
I will do so.
And you'll be giving us the variances.
I will do so, Honorable Chairperson. We as of end of that quarter, Honorable Chairperson, which will be on slide 77, we were sitting at 96% overall expenditure. Program 1 was exactly at 96. Program 2 was at 96, but you would take note that that is the program that also includes South African tourism. And that is also a program that included tourism enterprise, the tourism incentive program as well at that time. Program 3, we were at 98%, which was good. And the last program, we were at 95%. That 5% then accounts for the 35 million that I spoke about, which we were not able to earn, so that we could then also use it for the additional jobs that we would have been able to do. Go to the next slide. Yeah, that's the rest is just classifications and so on. But overall, the under expenditure would then have been in the area particularly of TIP, which would have been partly capital, partly on the other side, the EPWP one, which would also have been, which is a separate appropriation, which is not necessarily, but we have to delay it in this manner, but which is not necessarily part of the original books as such. I should have given you an apology for Mr. Ackerman. Unfortunately, he's down with flu, and he's been booked off, but he would have been here. So we are just liaising with him, and this is what we've got. So that 96% is indeed the final expenditure as of the end of the year. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There are things that I thought were in the process of just doing the what do we call them the reds, and not necessarily also looking at some of the other aspects, like in program one, I thought perhaps we need to amplify. You would take note that we've got issues around grievances and so on that we have reported, and these grievances, Honorable Chairperson, they firstly you would see that they are. It would be like two or four in a particular period. So when you're looking at 500 plus people that are in the establishment, and you look at that number, it's even less than 1% of the organization. But the most important thing that I wanted to raise with regards to that is that the nature of these grievances are... You have instances of people that would have tried to explain these things in a manner that the record does not compromise the grievances that are still current, because the manner in which we explain it should not necessarily affect whomsoever is the aggrieved party or so. So we had two grievances related to placement of people post the process of restructuring out of that whole process. So someone would feel maybe I could have been here instead of being here. Maybe I could actually grow my career here better than in this space, but the organization actually could perform better with you in this space as opposed to your growth, but not necessarily resulting in the organization also benefiting. So those types of issues. Other grievances would be the organization itself charging a person where the misconduct is of a financial type. Materiality, very, very small, but the nature requires that we deal with that. So you would also find issues of arbitration where we find a person guilty, the person appeals to whichever authority. Once that appeal has been dismissed, the person decides, I would opt for arbitration and go and try and see if I can. But then the sittings, you would find instances where when the sitting is supposed to take place, the person does not necessarily appear. They are off sick or something like that. Even in the sittings of the disciplinary hearings, you would find instances where, because we are reliant largely on cooperation of presiding officers, and those presiding officers don't necessarily always come from the department because we try to maintain the level of independence, that management never gets involved in terms of actually being the presiding, because we are, if the grievance is against an employee, then management is actually saying there's something that we would like to profit. So in those ones, you do find instances where their own work commitments, wherever else they work, compel them not to be there on the particular day. And instances where you find people are off sick on the day that they are actually supposed to appear. We had in the previous year one instance, we charged the person. After charging this person, so we pushed until just the day before. It was under program 4, just the day before, then he gives a letter of resignation and he disappears. This year, we had a similar occurrence, petty cash-related issues. We charge, and the person looks at it and realizes no one would actually be able to argue this thing, disappears. So there are those kinds of things. But as an organization, we, except where we really see that there is serious gross misconduct, we go for trying to correct people. So there would be instances in the previous year where a person attempts but does not necessarily benefit. But we can see there was a clear attempt and we demote the person. After demotion, the person does not necessarily have any delegations that have got anything to do with financial. So it's those kinds of things. But the message then goes into the organization, because the main thing in these things is the tone of the organization, the tone of management, the tone of the political leadership in how we are dealing with them. And everybody else must also then be able to see that we are living up to that. So those issues, I mean, they are part of these examples. We always get our financial disclosures done in time. Very little issues in terms of feedback we receive with regards to potential conflict. We have never really come across an instance where there's real conflict of interest and somebody is doing business with a sector or something like that. So there is a kind of proper controls. The other issue I thought I should mention is GTEC. GTEC now, Shamila, I thought you would also talk to it a little bit. They have done the reviews. They have got the reports. So these reports now, we are going to be presenting them to the Boyka principals so that they are able to look at that as well and see what proposals are we making in terms of going forward. So there will be projects that they will tell us not to proceed with. There will be projects that they will tell us to proceed with, but they will be able to say this is how it's quantified. So that is important, because if we go back, we will then realize that quarter four, program four, with respect to the level of performance, it was lower with regards to the EPWP jobs on the basis of that particular process. So now we'll be ready to come back with those projects and say these are now coming back into the pipeline and then reinstated. NTSS, you do know, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that it has gone to Cabinet. Cabinet has actually approved that we go for consultations. We have concluded the consultations. We had our last and final round of consultative discussions last month, which is August, with industry. So now we are at a point where we are basically finalizing so that Minister can take it back to Cabinet and then it can get a stamp. Once that is done, then it means the new NTSS is starting the implementation process. So we are looking at latest October to be able to get that Cabinet process done and finalized. The legislation, what we have targeted is that we will be done with the process of Cabinet by the end of the financial year. But there are crucial policy matters that are under consideration. I think she has hinted to some. There are issues about the grading council institutional arrangements, as an example. There are issues about the regime that governs the tourist guides and so on, and so on and so forth. So those are matters that are also seriously under consideration, and it will then go to Cabinet, and we hope that beginning of the financial year 2018-19, then it will be coming to Parliament. I thought I should just lift those. The ATC issue that Anemi spoke to, some of the feedback that we got is that in the continent, there are instances where when you introduce the accredited travel companies, when you introduce it, the accredited company that would then be bringing these applications on behalf of their clients take advantage of that and add some costs to the package, and it ends up artificially inflating the actual cost of the package to South Africa, as opposed to them actually seeing this as an advantage, that you are able to then get the whole suit and be able to get these clients into the embassy's domain and get these things done within a particular period of time. So those unintended consequences weighed against the benefit. The decision was that for now let's not go that route. So that's why we ended up where we are, like she was saying earlier. I will stop at that, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Before you stop, DG, and before I open for questions, can you give us an update on Ocean's economy?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We have received a Cabinet approval of the full plan. What was the date, Shamila? It's quite recent. It's quite... No, the final cabinet approval, 16th of August. Yes. 16th of August, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we received a final approval on the Ocean's economy. The approach we're going to be taking is nodes that we have identified in the plan. At some point, you may want to invite us to share the full plan. And the approach that we're going to be taking in those nodes is that we'll then crowd in these various support type mechanisms into that area. So infrastructure, enterprise development, skills development, all of that into that particular space. and make sure that all of it, including investment promotion and so on. So we are ready to implement with regards to that one. It has already gotten some early leads in terms of successes. There were specific instances where we simply needed decisions about whether a project can proceed in a particular piece of land. And investment was already coming from the private sector, which would go into that. Facilitation has been done, and the letter that was necessary for that to be unlocked has already been done. And it's worth, I think it's about 150 million rand. So there will be a lot of facilitation-related work that we'll be doing to try and unlock those kinds of things. But we would be happy to come and brief you on both the ocean's economy and at a later stage, obviously, the GTEC outcome, and later on the NTSS final. Thank you.
Thank you. May I start with Honorable Foss, who will be leaving in a few minutes' time, if you've got any questions, follow up. Okay. Honorable Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the GG and these DDGs for the presentation. Chairperson, I have a whole bag of questions. I'd like to start with the introduction and the EPWP. You know, I'm passionate about EPWP. Now, I don't know whether I have understood the DG correctly. He said, when you reach the targets with regard to EPWP, then you get another allocation. Is that true? Now, if then you must, if you get, reach the target, you get another allocation. Now, Chairperson, my question is to the department, plan for when they reach, if they reach their targets. Because you must plan. If you reach your target, what are you going to do? Chairperson, 88.4 million rand of the department was underspent. And I know the DG gave us explanation for that. But what measures has the department in place to curb that underspending for the next? Yeah, because underspending is a risk or a challenge, and they must plan to curb this. Chairperson, I'd like the DG to speak again for us on, I didn't mark it now. But that, let me just get it now. The bill. I'm trying to find it now with this question that I have here. But leave that. I'll come back to that one. Chairperson, then on the last slide, can the DG explain to me slide 78, I think, 78, expenditure per economical classification. I know in your explanation for the variance, you say it's due, the last one, software and other intangible assets. The percentage that you spend there is 47%. And I know you give the reason as due to cost containment. But my question is, DG, how does it impact on service delivery? Because that's quite a cut in the allocation. The same with the household. Allocation for households, 66% was spent. And then you say there in your explanation, the bulk of the unspent funds, that's on slide 7-8, 22.6 million is due to funds allocated to the EPWP program, which was not approved by the Department of Public Works for spending. You know, that's new to me. I never knew that you must report to Public Works. I am a member of Public Works, and that's new to me. And I would like you, because I want to take it up with them, to explain it to me amply so that I can take it up with them. Then, Chairperson, my next question. It was a little bit haphazard this morning, Chairperson. We shouldn't press them so for the time, because we went from the one to another slide. I got a little lost. On the accreditation of travel companies for visa facilitation, I'd like you to speak on that. How do you identify those travel companies? What criteria are there? And is there any assessment of how they how good they are? And then, Chairperson, on slide 62, we had also we have a table there of youth that were at training and workplace placements. I'd like the TGG to speak on that numbers. If we look at the table on page 62, we see that, for example, some of the provinces, there was no training done in November and December. And, Chairperson, I would like to know the numbers. Numbers. How do you decide province A get 600 and province B get 200 and province C get 10? And what are you doing when province C has only 10? What are you doing to improve that kind of numbers? Chairperson, I'd like to stop there. As I've told you, we fly around from there to there, and I'm a little disorganized now. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, thank you. You know, these reports are incredibly detailed, and they drill down to the base level. But even then, one is not really sure of the big picture. So we know what's going on from the SA Tourism reports about how many people, and the departmental reports, as we're seeing today, tend to be not the big picture, but parts of the big picture broken down into how many chefs were trained, how many employee disputes were there, as we've seen this morning. So it's not always that easy to take a report as thick as this and drill down even further. So I'm going to just ask a couple of more generalized reports, which in a sense could also be asked of SA Tourism, but since the DG has oversight over that entity, through you, Chair, I'd like to ask those questions. So the first one is a general question on macroeconomic trends throughout the world and how our department is responding to that. So the DG will know that Africa had a growth spurt in economic growth. I think six out of the top or the fastest growing countries in the world a few years back were from Africa, but that's starting to slow down a bit. And what's happened now is that Europe is starting to show more and more green shoots and more increasing rates of economic growth. And if you look at the various stock exchanges in Europe and North America, they're all at record levels, as in fact is ours, despite everything. And my first question is, therefore, with continuing growth in Europe accelerating and North America, as well as in Asia, where China is still doing well and India, with its problems, is also a big market simply because there's so many people there.
Has the department evaluated any particular change in strategy in terms of attracting those tourists from outside our country in terms of the 10 million or so inbound tourists that we have? The interesting part about that is that we know that Angola now is got the third highest, it's the third biggest economy in Africa, which is perhaps counterintuitive when you consider how big Egypt and Nigeria and South Africa are. In fact, it's Angola that's the third biggest. And I know there's a lot of petrodollars that used to be spent. And the 3 ministers back, Honorable von Schalkwyk, used to tell us how, in fact, Angolans spend a lot more than other people. But the oil prices are low at the moment, and Angola is going through quite difficult transition in terms of not having as much money to spend. And I'd like some idea from the department is, bearing in mind that Africa is slowing down and Angola as a country is slowing down, are we really looking at the burgeoning wealth that's been created in the Northern Hemisphere and readjusting our strategies? That's the first thing. Then there is reference to final report on the development of tourism interpretation signage at the four iconic national heritage sites was completed. I'm not quite sure what interpretation signage is. Is that, what is that? Is that Braille or is it multiple languages or what is it actually? So if I do the clarification on that, and then I'm going to raise this again because it's infuriating year after year, and the previous minister, not the current one, even mentioned it in his budget speech, and that was almost 2 years ago now. The Nelson Mandela capture site. There's a meeting that's about to take place, or has just taken place, hosted by an employee of the department, Raylon Pillay, where he's called stakeholders together, but nobody from this committee, to talk about signage on the R103. Now, if you know the R103 in KwaZulu-Natal, it is a small road, and it's not anywhere near the N3. It's going to make no difference at all to actually attract people to that particular site, which, as I've mentioned many times on this committee, Chairperson, you've heard me say it, is a site which every single South African, regardless of race or history or gender, should visit. Greatest man ever walked our country's soil needs to be better advertised than a small sign on a district road. And I'd like to ask the department, what are they actually doing to interact with SANRAL, who after 4 years of ducking and diving have finally admitted they are responsible for that part of the N3, and saying to them, you put up a brown sign on the N3 advertising a private golf course, right? Why can you not actually do the reasonable thing and do a nation-building thing for our country and put up a sign directing tourists off the N3 at the Howick North Tweedy turnoff to the Nelson Mandela capture site? This last weekend we just had the Nelson Mandela marathon, which ended at the capture site. I was there to watch the runners coming in to cheer them on. I'm going to run next year. There's 13,000 odd runners, and I mean, it's an international thing. It's so important, and yet there's not a single sign on the N3, but we can advertise golf courses on the N3. There's something wrong here. And you know that I keep raising this chair because I've got to get somebody to actually take this issue by the horns and make it happen. Now, I've tried with the minister, and I'm now on my third minister, and after nearly 10 years, the best they can come up with is we'll have a meeting with stakeholders, which we've been having for a decade, talk about a small sign on a road that's nowhere near where we need to attract people. So now I'm asking the department, what are they going to do? Are they going to contact their counterparts at SANRAL and say, let's get together and let's make this happen? So I would like to raise that. Right, then the last question I have is on page 71. It talks about the Blue Flag beaches, and the annual target was a program facilitating the implementation of the Blue Flag program at 50 South African beaches. Now, if you facilitate the implementation of a program, I mean, I'm not actually sure what that means either. Does it mean that the department is driving a process to get existing Blue Flag beaches to maintain the standards which would enable them to retain their Blue Flag status? Or is it about interacting with the local municipalities or metros where there used to be a blue flag beach and now there's no longer because standards have slipped. In Etiquini there's a problem in my province where there used to be blue flag beaches and they haven't kept up standards and they've lost their blue flag status. I mean, to me that would be an ideal thing for the department to do, and that's the kind of interdepartmental and interministerial cooperation we pleaded for a long time, along with COGTA, along with arts and culture. Tourism has a nexus with those departments because we can't offer a product if the heritage site is broken down and the municipality isn't maintaining it, for example. And you can't attract people if you say, well, this beach's E. coli content is so high, they've taken away the blue flag status, and if you're swimming, you're going to get sick. But can I just clarify on that? And if we're not actually trying to interact with those local government authorities to restore the blue flag status and to clean up the problems and address the issues that led to that loss of blue flag status in the first place, why aren't we doing that? Is there a plan to actually have that constructive interaction so that we can actually start having a few wins and start extending the number of blue flag beaches, which is good for the country as a whole, because you can advertise that as part of a more general package, not just for that particular town or beach. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, DG and the DDGs, for the presentations that we got. From the onset, I want to say at least in your presentations, you show that there is an improvement from quarter three to quarter four, which we hope it will never redress again. We'll go on improving even in the new financial year that we will be dealing with now. In the presentation, you talked about those six learners who dropped out of the chef training program. What are we doing to ensure that in future we don't have learners dropping, and what are their reasons for dropping out? What can we do to ensure that we don't have this type of a problem happening again going forward? Secondly, we also talked about that we have already developed the tourism investment master plan. How will this one assist us to move forward in a much better way? If you could also explain on that one, how are we going to see this one actually helping us going forward? Those are my two questions I was having, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
DG and the team, before you come in here, there are some projects that were started in quarter four, not completed, but now they've been completed. Does it mean that has built into quarter one? Job creation. I think it's important that at a certain point in time when you come to report, you inform us about jobs that have been created. And also the program that NDT is running, and tell us how many went through those programs apart from the women's program. How many, for instance, the chef's program, the food assurance program, and many others. How many have been absorbed? How many were created and how many have been absorbed? That helps us because tourism is also responsible for job creation. So we won't stop asking about job creation in the tourism industry and also from the department. Indeed, Nelson Mandela capture site is very important. Maybe we also, as a committee, have to ask a question to the deputy president so that this is taken up. It's quite a big issue and it's quite a big place. and it's worth for South Africans to see, even domestic tourists to go and see it. Maybe even people from those departments have never been to that area. Maybe the day you go to that area, you'll push more. It's not in your alleyway. It's in the alleyway of the Department of Transport, SANRAL, and whoever, and the municipality. But we ask you if you can push, because we can talk to you. Now, what is the NDG doing to ensure that projects identified in the tourism, in the tourism investment master plan are ready for investors? And yeah, are those projects there and they are ready for investors? We were informed previously that all the provincial managers will be absorbed in the department. Can you tell us the status of all those people? And also, tell us about any vacancies, if you've got vacancies, so that we know what's going on. DG and your team, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm going to let the DDGs deal with the questions first, and then I will do the conclusion. We can start from that side and with your ATCs.
Thank you, DG, Honorable Chair, Members. On the ITC program and the criteria, initially we thought that there will be a set of criteria that we can apply to more than one country. And in the work that we've done, we established that, you know, although the high-level criteria would be the same in the sense of whether they are registered, whether their financial situation is sound, In a specific country, they might differ from country to country. For example, in China, where we have the program running at the moment, they have what they call business approval for Chinese outbound travel agencies. And there's a set of criteria for outbound travel agency to adhere to before they can register at the China National Tourism Association or administration. It relates to whether they lawfully establish, whether they have obtained their business certificate, and they must be in business for at least 2 years. The agency must never have been punished for administrative for a fine, or infringe of tourist lawful rights, and so on and so on. But one of the criteria, for example, is also a cash guarantee of 5 million yen that they must have with the Chinese National Tourism Administration. So there's a set of criteria for travel outbound agencies in China, and we agreed as an industry that those criteria is sufficient for us, so that if you are registered with the CNTA, you will also then be receiving the ATC accreditation from South Africa. That list is published on the Chinese website, and we are reviewing that annually. So that is what's happening in China. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with the questions around the investment master plan. There were two of them. So last year the investment master plan was developed. It was in extensive consultation with provinces and, of course, where relevant, with local authorities. The intention of the investment work is really to assist local authorities and provinces to package the projects that are tourism-related projects, so that they can be sold to both public and private sector partners. So some of the work that the team has been doing with those projects is to actually be in discussions with the Department of Corporate Governance on the work that is being done on the municipal infrastructure grant
for example, to try to secure funding from the municipal infrastructure grant for tourism-related infrastructure that is necessary. So we're doing multiple pieces of work on investment. It's really firstly sorting out the key tourism priorities, both from an access perspective as well as a tourism facilities perspective. It's then working with the owners of those assets to actually package their investment projects. And it's actually then also assisting them to make the links with both public and private sector partners to try to sell those projects and get investment into it. So that's the work that we are doing in terms of investment. With regard to the Blue Flag Beaches program, it's an expanded public works program. Its intention really is exactly as you were raising, Honourable Member Krumbach, is to maintain the standards of the Blue Flag Beaches, and it's the ones that have the Blue Flag status. We have also started working on what is called a Green Coast program. So it's also beaches that then have the potential to be in Blue Flag status, but for a variety of reasons, because their standards are not up to those measures, it's to work with them on those beaches to actually get them up to the measures. Part of our program is working with Environmental Affairs on collecting the research information so that we can start improving the quality as you are raising. It's also working with the local authorities on infrastructure maintenance, on general issues of safety, and also on just ensuring that visitors to the space have an experience that is meaningful. So the Blue Flag program is exactly as you are mentioning it, about kind of maintaining the standards at beaches, working in collaboration with provinces and local authorities, and where there are challenges to actually resolve them through that program. I think we started off with 50 beaches, and we're now up to 75. But the 75 is not all Blue Flag. Some of those are Blue Flag because they have the status, and others of those are what we're calling a Green Coast program. So it's really lifting up the standards in those spaces. And then in terms of the EPWP, the incentive program, Honourable Member Adams, there are two ways in which you actually earn a budget on EPWP. There's the budget allocation, which is your standard allocation, and then there is an incentive amount of money, which if you meet your targets, the Department of Public Works then allows you to use that portion of money. So you can utilize the budget that's allocated to you up front in the year. When your targets are met, they then have to release the funding. So in the DG's opening, when he spoke about the $22 million that was an incentive portion that was not approved. The reason it was not approved by Public Works is obviously because we didn't meet our targets around full-time equivalents. So that money only becomes available to us once those targets have been reached. Okay, I'll stop there.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond on the numbers on slide 62 as posed by Honorable Adams. Last year when we procured services for the training, we had a problem as indicated on the report that a service provider for Limpopo and Northwest withdrew. What we did was to make sure that by the end of the year we were able to reach the numbers. So we topped up for other provinces the figures which were supposed to have gone to Limpopo and Northwest. The criteria that you are using to see in terms of how many numbers in a province, this depends largely on the establishments, the host employers who will be ready to host the young people for their experiential learning. 70% of the program is practicals and 30 is on theory. So KZN, Gauteng, as well as Western Cape, their establishment are so many, hence we are able to have more numbers as compared to the to the other provinces. At the same time, Northern Cape is sparsely populated, even in terms of the establishments and the willingness of the host to take up on this of these young people. This is a program where the minister said she would like to meet with the province as well as the business so that we can discuss this matter, because it's becoming a little bit in each and every program that we are trying to do in Northern Cape, especially around the training. We don't find much willingness. So we are hoping that this intervention will really assist us for the Northern Cape to really capitalize on these training programs for the young people. I think I'll also link it up to the reasons of why do we have dropouts in terms of the numbers for these training programs. Pregnancies being one of the things, some of the young people get permanent jobs, then they leave the program, and unfortunately abscondment. But I would like also to put this one forward, also responding to what the chair was asking, especially on the chef's program. For the past financial year, we had 577 candidates, and out of those 570, 518 graduated. Actually, we are having the last final graduation this coming Tuesday. 90% of the learners have passed. 66% of the learners achieved distinctions and merit passes. A total of 19 hotel schools participated in the programs, meaning as the department, we need to ensure that we monitor all these 19 hotels to ensure that our learners get the most of the program. 100% rate pass was achieved in 9 of the school hotels. One is in Vembe, one is in Alfresco Fusion School in the Eastern Cape. We have Francois Ferreira, we have the Swiss Hotel in Gauteng, Ikusasa here in Western Cape, Waterbeck in Limpopo, Silwood Kitchen in Western Cape, and Mafikeng Hotel School. These are the schools that managed to have all the learners to be in the program and had a 100% pass. Out of these 518 candidates, a total of 24 graduates, as we speak, some of them couldn't even wait to receive their certificates. They are abroad. They're in the U.S. Some of them, they are in Seychelles, including the 20 that we forwarded to Seychelles the beginning of the year. So that's how, in terms of the jobs that you are creating, and as well as ensuring that these kids further get more experience outside of the country, as well as within the country, for them to can come up with their own businesses, if we may put it that way. On the interpretation signage within the World Heritage Sites, interpretation here meaning what is within that attraction. Within the attraction, let's say within the World Heritage Sites. If they have a tree that they want to talk about, then we'll have that plaque. But basically it will be showing what's happening within the park. With the capture site, we found ourselves having to also deal with the directional signage as it was requested by the portfolio committee. And we indicated even last time that from Salga site, they channel us to the R103. They cannot allow the signage to be on the national road. Yes, Salga, not Salga. Sunral. Yes, thanks for the correction. And we have engaged the Department of Transport, the province, and the Umgeni municipality, who indicated that they have the service provider who look not only for the capture site, but the whole area within that municipality, so that they ensure that blind signage, even directional signage, is done. We'll keep on following up on this, but we cannot ensure that it won't be on R103, it will be on the national. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll address the issues around the vacancies and the provinces. When we closed the financial year, we stood at 6.6% vacancy rate, which is well below our targeted rate of 8%. However, as a result of the restructuring, that picture changed because we went from 6.6% and found ourselves now at 13.1%. And there's a reason for that, in that when we came from a structure, a fully funded structure of 504 positions and some unfunded, position 23, which then as we restructured, we had to then reduce those numbers to arrive at a figure of 508, which was approved, which was based on our approved structure. The actions that we have had to undertake is that even though the number of posts that we had exceeded the number of permanent employees, we then had to embark on a process of matching and placing, and that took effect as of 1st April. And we ended up with 56 additional officials to our establishment, and a majority of those were at salary levels 6 to 8. And that came about as a result of course, the job grading processes, the job evaluations that were conducted as part of the restructuring. And then, of course, we then also experienced some budget cuts, which also came into play. So in the first month of the restructure, we then embarked on that matching and placing. However, we also gave employees who were aggrieved, you know, about their placements, they were able to lodge grievances, and those were addressed very quickly within 7 days. And when we're not able to address them internally, then they were forwarded then to our executive authority. And there were very few that went there. And those have since been addressed. But we knew at the beginning of this financial year that we would have a high vacancy rate of 14%, but also we knew that as we continue to place our officials, then we'll see ourselves as gradually reducing that high rate to reach at least the target of 8% by the end of the financial year. We've done a lot of bulk advertising internally, and the response has been good. So there's been shortlisting, interviews, as we fill positions, other vacancies come up. But that's good because then it allows us to then place our additional staff, and we're prioritizing that. So we, for example, this week we have agreed on about 38 of the posts, which will then be offered to interview to our colleagues who interviewed for them. Just by offering those posts, we'll see the vacancy rate going down to between 9 and 10%. So, you know, it's going to be an ongoing process. The provincial staff, they have been affected also. The department has taken a position to shut down the provincial offices. That, of course, was because of the reduced structure, but also the cost containment measures, because the lease rates are quite high in the provinces, and for offices that house sometimes, you know, 2, 3, 4 people, so we're to do some rationalization there. But what we've done is we've involved the staff in our change management processes. We've given them until December to stay in the provinces to allow them to decide whether they want to relocate to Pretoria or make other arrangements for themselves. Some of them have requested us to try and negotiate for them to be placed in the provincial departments, and we've done that with all the provinces. Three initially indicated that they would consider those employees, but in following up, we really haven't been able to solidify anything with them. So, but long and short of it is, with now the with the new structure, no employee will be retrenched, because we actually have more posts than we do have people. The funded posts are 508, and so with the numbers that we're dealing with our employees, no one will be retrenched. It's a matter of placing those who are additional, placing those who've applied for other positions. So we're quite comfortable that no one will be left out in the cold. Thanks, Chief.
DG, as you respond, you also keep us abreast as to your having come from the local government conference. Are you comfortable with what is happening in the municipalities, and how do you maintain communication and coordination of work with municipalities? And then finally, you give such a big chunk of money to SAT. Is your oversight to SAT adequate? Thanks.
Honourable Chairperson, I think I'm going to ask DDG Rampile to share with you some of the things they are doing in the municipalities as well. But I should say, it varies. You find in some municipalities it's a whole new council, and there's got to be briefings that have got to be done from the officials that we work with in that particular space, and some of the projects would then have to go through processes that would also enable the new leadership to be on board. So we do that. We do send letters to alert them to projects that were current and so on. And it's an ongoing exercise. But we do demonstrate to them what the project actually means, even for themselves, not just for ourselves, and what it means in some instances for the country. So those are some of the things we're grappling with, but they do have a proper engagement that they have organized with local government. Oversight on SAT, Honorable Chairperson, I think Honorable Krumbok also hinted it. We do oversight on SAT, but I would like to explain the nature of the oversight that we do. It has two big elements. The first element is governance, and I will explain both. The second element is strategy. So governance would look at the legal compliance, would look at running a clean organization, would look at processes and systems, protocols between us in terms of the flow of things, matters that they must also seek concurrence, all those kinds of issues. But when it comes to matters of strategy, Honorable Chairperson, we try very hard to desist from dictating to them what the strategy should be. So the board would lead the process of actually having a strategy in place and make a recommendation to the minister in terms of that particular strategy. What we then do in terms of our support to the minister with regards to that oversight, we look at whether their strategy and the various plans are taking into account our guiding broader policy documents. So does SAT strategy and the 5 in 5 in particular, does it respond to the NDP in terms of the broad objectives that we're supposed to meet? Does it meet the requirements as stated in the medium-term strategic framework in terms of us pursuing job creation, pursuing economic growth, and so on. Does it take into account the national tourism sector strategy and where it wants to take us? Does it take into account the growth imperatives that would have come from other prescripts, whether it is prioritization that is being done in budget statements or in the SONA and so on? So these issues, they have got to be taken into account. That's one aspect in the strategy part. The second part of it is that we look at whether, when they say we are going to market it, market X, market Y, or we are going to re-rationalize and go for a hub strategy, we look at how that has been arrived at. Is it rational, but also is it responding to the broader challenges that we face as a country? Is it also taking specific elements that are required of them in terms of transformation imperatives? An example would be, are SMMEs in their agenda as they go and actually promote the country, as they go and get into the JMAs and so on and so forth? So this is the kind of oversight that we look at. And if in that particular process we then determine that they have arrived at this rationally, but what they have also arrived at is sound, and the approach they want to take would also maximize the utilization of the resources that they've got, then we are happy. They then go and do their activities and so on. We do not meddle in that particular space. And once they have actually then done that, they would come back to us. We then monitor whether these things are actually taking place. But if it's things like, for instance, an example, Chairperson, they have to submit something to you and you find that maybe there's something that is an is or an R is not necessarily supposed to be, We don't really, because they've got a full team that deals with whatever work quality and so on. But we focus on good governance and sound strategy that would actually yield in terms of performance, and confirming that performance is actually taking place throughout, and not necessarily getting into that particular space. The board will do the oversight, and it will then advise the minister accordingly and say these are the issues. And they almost all these colleagues are somewhat involved. So if you take DDG Rampil, when it comes to matters of domestic tourism, she has got her eye on that fully. If you take DDG Malan, she's got her eye on their activities with regards to the international work that they are doing and so on and so forth, including some of the work that relates to events. So having said that, coming back to the environment, We operate in a very fluid environment, which is also full of contradictions, if I could put it that way. And I will explain that. So it's fluid in one way, in that we, today, well, yesterday when I was coming back to Cape Town, I flew with one executive from the industry, who is in the tour operating space, big organization. And I said, how's business? Says, well, it's quite good, but I'm a bit worried. I said, what are you worried about? He said, only if the rent was not to strengthen in the manner that it is doing, then we would really have a great year. So these are the things that we're dealing with. Meanwhile, if you go to SAT and all the other provincial entities, and they're working very well together, trying to pull them together so that there is no duplication. If you bring all of those together and you say, what is your biggest challenge? They would say, we can't reach everywhere we would love to. Why? Because the rent is not necessarily going to be able to make it when it's too weak. So these are the contradictions that we've got to grapple with all the time. And as we grapple with these particular contradictions, we have to prioritize. So if you look at the continent as an example, where do we see recovery? There is recovery that we see in Nigeria. That economy is definitely going to recover. There are security issues are not as they used to be. There's still a bit of challenges, but they are not as they used to be. And as a result, you would then find that the space that they currently occupy, particularly from an oil point of view, would significantly improve. So those yields will definitely assist their economy, and as that actually happens, it means there's going to be a degree of disposability for those people that are actually in that particular space, and we could be able to then access a market like that. But there are a number of factors. There are number, even Angola is an example. Angola is a... It has people that have real good money, and it has people that don't have money. The people that have got money, by and large, normally don't get too affected by the swings. They are in a space where they can proceed with what they were doing. So that specific market, fully targeted, it's a question of us then saying to ourselves in terms of the propositions and so on. But what I'm gathering from the question is whether there's going to be a particular focus in the north, given some of these challenges that we are seeing. We have always said that we must make sure that we don't put all our eggs in one basket. And this is why you would have seen part of what will cushion us quite a lot going forward is the fact that events are taking a much more central role, because those events don't, when you're talking about the business events, they don't necessarily rely on one specific market. So if it's an association that is coming to do a meeting here, its members are coming from the globe, and they would be able to provide that level of cushion. One area that we have seen, given inward-looking policies in most of the different areas, which in the long run would definitely also affect us. If you look at Europe, there's a lot of travel that now takes place within, as opposed to even going to countries outside. So UK is also experiencing part of this. So when you look at those, then you must ask yourself, what is it that we are actually supposed to do? We have to reach all of them. And this is where the hub strategy comes in. So if you've got, and it's an absolute necessity because we don't have money, that we can actually then reach everybody. So if you look at the what is this peninsula? The Italy and your Paris and that area. Yes. So if you look at that whole space. We have one office, but it is now able to reach that entire area. But what will support these things effectively will be your airlift capacity. So you've got your Iberian airline. It would come here. When it goes back, it must have people. So people-to-people relations is another part of this. So South Africans must also visit other places, those who can afford. Because when somebody flies here, they won't wait for that group to finish their tour and then go back and then come back for those people. So there has got to be making sure that we are able to sustain the levels of airlift capacity that is required for us to do so. And we see Africa. Middle East presenting quite some opportunity in the future. Middle East in particular, if you look at some of the recent policies which we need not necessarily go into detail about, that presents and the environment, some of the environments in areas where they used to go to Turkey quite a lot. And the environment there, because of the security situations at times, has shifted people from that environment. So these are some of the things that we observe as we are going through our environmental scan. We do serious, intense, proper screening of the environment to understand it and see what we need to do. But we believe the people-to-people relations that we are emphasizing on particularly in the continent, will assist us. As we speak, Minister is actually in Malawi, and we have got an agreement with the Malawi that we've just signed now. There are a few agreements in the pipeline, the Zambia agreement, the Namibians. So these will then be able to follow through and strengthen the people-to-people relations. But to be able to get into that market, there's a lot more work that we have to do. It's not complaints. The feedback we've been receiving is African countries come to Indaba. They support it. They bring their products, make sure that they confirm their stance and so on. And they would like to also see us doing the same. They've got similar shows and so on. They want us to be there, whether it is Sanganai in Zimbabwe. So those are the kinds of things that we are saying we need to look into this thing. But we don't dictate any of these things to SAT. We allow SAT to work through the board and to actually say, this is what they see, and this is where they believe the yield is going to come from. But we would spread all the time. I mean, we are seeing some significant shifts in the African American market. There's a lot of interest in the country, and some of it. I mean, we hear people talking about African American youth wanting to have their 21st birthday in the continent, and they would rather than come to South Africa. So it's there are those leads. We are hearing about serious interest in gospel music of South Africa, and they want to do massive exchange tours with states like Chicago, states like New York, and so on. So these are things that are actually there, but all of these things in the end, the fact would remain that we are working in a constrained physical environment, and that constrained physical environment we need to prioritize, reprioritize, and really prioritize the real priority. So ultimately we've got to invest our money in areas that we do believe that we are going to get a yield, but not to lose sight of the fact that you don't go into an area and withdraw because the yields are not there at that particular time, only to find that in 5 years' time, when you go back, nobody wants to listen to your message because they are swamped by other messages. So it's a perpetual balancing act. It's got a lot of dependencies. It's got a whole environment that we must always take into account. But the truth of the matter is that ultimately, we are making a huge contribution as tourism to the country at this point in time. A huge contribution. If you look at the figures, those figures are until when, Anime? The last figures that, until June. If you look at those figures until June, we're looking at 19 billion or so thereabout in terms of the net income to the country. That's something that we can do with that, and we can do with a lot more. So we are awake to this external environment. We are aware that these are big issues. From the department side, and part of what Shamila's team is doing currently, is that in the development of products, these leads that we get from SAT, the change in the environment, but the markets that we're going to focus on, for instance, halal and so, these are the things that are going to be informing how do we do our improvements in the products. So as we go into the future, then we'll be able to clearly state that in that note, we believe that this market would be able to benefit, but these are things that we're bringing in into that particular space. But I think a lot more of this you probably discussed when you were dealing with the framework with SAT.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Regarding local government, we have both the informal and the informal, formal and informal capacity building. On the informal is the one that we, on a quarterly basis, come to the portfolio committee and report on. the main purpose of the capacity building being to provide an integrated approach for the public sector community members within the selected municipalities to create a platform where stakeholders can engage and share information. We have been doing this for the past 3 years. Initially, when we started, we used to go through local municipalities, mixing even the district. But now we realize the best entry point would be through a district with its locals. We had Bushbuck Ridge as one of those right at the beginning. And when we started with Bushbuck Ridge, they didn't even have a tourism officer within their municipality. But with the intervention in year two, they were able to have a tourism officer, but at the same time come up with a local tourism organization within the area. They are doing quite well. In terms of the formal training, is through the University of Pretoria. So far, 103 officials have gone through that program, and 35 municipalities were part of that program. In terms of the new structure, now we have a unit that looks into the IGR issues for local government as well as the provinces. And the main purpose is to ensure that our planning, our implementations of projects are synchronized. We have been a little bit, I would say, weak in terms of participating within the IDP processes. And with this unit, we are hoping that we'll be able from right from the beginning go through the IDP process within those selected municipalities which show tourism potential. They have prioritized, we have engaged COCTA and SALGA on this new unit on in terms of what are the things that we can support municipalities on, and they've also guided us that they do have priority areas which they have identified. If within those priority areas we find that there's potential which aligns to what we have also identified as nodal areas to work on, then we'll be able to really utilize the resources in a very effective and efficient way. Thank you, Chair.
Any follow-up questions, Honourable?
Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to give the DG something, if I may, to look at so he understands what I'm talking about.
It's a brown sign that I think it's best if I can give this to the chair. The chair can actually see it.
She has seen it. You haven't seen it. But you can give it to us, no problem. So, Chairperson, this is actually now quite difficult, but I'd like to say to you that, I'd like to say to you, but the DG of everyone can hear me, so, okay, so, as a Democratic Alliance, and we don't bring party politics into this committee, it's one of the strengths of this committee over the years. We have adopted an attitude going right back to my predecessor, Gareth Morgan, 10 years ago, that the country comes first, and this is not a committee where we want to play party politics. And I think everyone, including your predecessor, Honourable Gumede, Donald, would agree that's the way we've approached this. And we've had a lot of success in this committee from working together and not putting on our ANC or EFF or DA hat. And so we don't take cheap shots at the professional staff who work for the Department of SA Tourism. We try and be constructive, and that comes through in the media statements and the speeches and the budget process that we all engage in. So I showed the DG that sign, because that sign is a brown sign, and it is on the N3. Okay? And it's an actual sign. That you saw the cars, and it's not a fake sign. The sign is there. What's fake is the writing on the sign. It does not say Nelson Mandela capture site. What it says is Bushbuck Country whatever, golf, private golf estate or something. So I'm making the point that there already is a brown sign on the N3 advertising something, which has got value to the people who live there, and it adds rates income to Umgani municipality because it's a up, you know, an upmarket high-end estate, and it's valuable for that. And I'm not criticizing the fact that there's a golf estate. We need places where people pay a lot of rates because that helps through redress to actually start to close the gaps that we have in our country. But I can't accept the answer I've given in that, well, there's been an engagement with SANRAL and Umgani, because I've been hearing that for a decade. And the point I'm trying to make is, every time I raise this, and I raise it every year, I get told there's been an engagement. Now, some of the times, those engagements don't even happen. And 2 years ago, I pointed out 6 or 7 committees that one after the other failed to send people to meetings, and people said they didn't have mandates, and people said they wanted to go but they weren't invited, and people that were invited didn't want to go. I mean, it's a horror show. And Minister Hanukom, when he was minister then, admitted that there was a bureaucratic failure in this instance. So, quite frankly, and that's why I made my initial comments, I'm not attacking the DGG or the DG when I say this, but it is not good enough anymore simply to come here once a year and tell us we've had an engagement. Because the question that should be asked is, if Bushwick Country Club can get a brown sign on the N3, why can't Nelson Mandela get a brown sign on the N3?
Or a white one.
Sorry?
Or a white one.
I really couldn't care what the color is. But the point is to say, well, there's engagement taking place and we're putting up a sign on the R103 without overemphasizing a thing is actually insulting. And what I would have wanted the department to have told me is that they've had a real interaction with SANRAL and put it to SANRAL. There's a lady there who works in Mzunduzi, Peter Maritzburg, for those who don't know what Mzunduzi is, who controls this process, and that part of the N3 is run by a concession. It's called the N3TC concession. And they get to decide. And with great respect, Chairperson, nobody has been able to tell me for 5 years why a private golf estate can get a brown sign on the N3, but we can't put one for a monument that's over 100 million rand now, budgeted cost. 100 million rand is what COCTA is paying for it and what the ratepayers of Umgani are paying for it. And that is interaction we should be having. That is the transparency we should be having. And I really want something more than an anodyne, generalized, vague answer. There have been interactions. Who interacted with who? What was put to SANRAL? Was SANRAL put on the spot and asked, but you approved that sign, why aren't you approving this sign, which in the general scheme of things is actually far more important. No disrespect for the people who live at Bushwick Country Club Estate. I really do mean that. I don't disrespect Bushwick, but I've made this point before. This is a national heritage site. It's to honor the memory of a man that actually saved this country. And all I get back from the department is, well, there have been interactions. Surely this is more important than that. Surely we actually have a right in this committee to actually have a report saying, these are the people we spoke to, this is how they answered the question as to why a private golf estate got a brown sign, but there can't be one for the capture site. And then we can interrogate that, and actually this should be an interministerial priority, in that I can't remember if there's 1 million or 4 million cars here on the N3, but there's a fraction of that on the R103. It's actually insulting to this committee when you say you're going to put a sign up that no one's going to see when 3 kilometers away there's a sign where you can't even go to unless you're prepared to pay. I mean, you want to play a round of golf. Do you really need an N3 brown sign to do that? And how many people are going to stop and say, oh, well, I was going to Durban, I was going to Johannesburg, but now I'm going to pop in for a round of golf? It's ludicrous. It's bizarre. It's surreal, Chairperson. Can we please get an honest, transparent answer about what is the nature of interaction and why is this double standards being applied? And I really, you can hear the passion in my voice, but also I'm hoping you're hearing the frustration. It's actually been far too long now that we've been given the runaround about this. Yeah, I think we're all getting frustrated because, as many people have said, including Honorable Pandor, Nelson Mandela belongs to all of us. He is our national hero, and that crosses right through party lines. Can we please get a proper answer from the department or a proper answer from someone, because I get pressure now from our constituents who say, what are you doing? You've been there for 10 years and you haven't produced it. I'm pleading to you. It can't be that the bureaucracy works so slowly and that the answers we get are as inadequate as they are. And I say that with respect to the department, because over the years I've supported the department just like I've supported SA Tourism, but we have to do better than this.
Thank you very much for that, because you sort of raise the philanthropic feeling to all of us. As we are talking, I'm thinking of so many things that maybe even the highest powers that be should look into this. But we'll try to negotiate this side, to negotiate our way through. For instance, I'm going to ask him to write a good letter for me to take it to the good powers that be around here, so that we see what can be done. And as for responses, we'll jump everybody else and go to people that maybe can do something from here. If Robben Island is so great, if Nelson Mandela is a world figure, where he was captured so that he goes to prison for so many years. You're right, Honorable Kronborg. But on that sordid note, have you been to Treasury to ask for funding? And we were given that funding, it was for what? And then finally, we're talking rural. If tomorrow France, not France only, but maybe people from EU want to have a rural taste of South Africa. Rural taste. They say, we want to sleep rural, we want to see rural, we want to see even people rural, we want to see the bushes and whatever. The Department of Tourism is responsible for that. With its baby, what are you going to do as the department? By saying the department, I also involve SAT. Thank you. And once you've responded on that one, I think we would call it a day, but the committee would remain behind just for an announcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, we do not want to give excuses. At all. And honorable members would know matters that get raised by the committee, we take them very seriously. All matters, we take them very seriously. And we act on them. We do act on them. We are, however, at times hamstrung by what falls within our mandate and what does not fall within our mandate. And I understand, and I fully understand what Honorable Kronborg is saying. I want to make a suggestion, Honorable Chairperson, that if you call the parties that are meant to deal with the matter to Parliament, Parliament has got powers to call any person in the country, any. So that you do not have a situation where the Department of Tourism attempts to answer on behalf of others. Because that would create a scenario where tomorrow we will run out of potential partners. Because people would want to help us, but when we get into trouble, it's not us. So something of that sort. So it would be good. Even the person whom Honorable Kronborg is saying is the lead person in authorizations of such in the particular route, to explain such before Parliament. That would be okay for us. I would come here, I would come with the DDG, I would come with the official directly responsible for the project on the ground. We will lay our issues to say these are the things that we're doing. So it's when, because in the end you have a scenario where there is a specific law and it says 1, 2, 3. So discretionary, if that has indeed been applied, then they will explain it and say these are the things that need to be done. This is what perhaps, once that has been done and there is a clear rule that us, we have got to play, or they say to us, no, we have a problem in that, maybe we don't have resources, we can then look at those kinds of things. That's a different issue. But the main issue is that it is a matter that falls within another executive authority's domain. And that's why even the treating, Honorable Kumbo, you can see I'm trying to treat through your chair, to treat quite carefully, because it's not a matter within my minister's domain directly. And in the end, it's got to be handled in a way that would assist to say, okay, all of us are here. Of course, I'm sure they would have liaised and so on, but they would, the minute that invitation comes, I'm sure it would actually then compel everybody to start saying, hey, let's get together and try and see what is it that we're going to be saying. So that we are consistent also from our side as officials in our pure professional conduct to say we should never find ourselves misleading Parliament by giving hope where we don't have absolute control that this is something we can do. But that's something that we are proposing, and if we get that invitation, definitely we would come with everybody else.
I accept what the DG says and his honourable intent. I think it's a very good idea to get people to come here. I do understand. I refer to the nexus of the various departments that I mentioned, transport and arts and culture, and that's where he's correct. It's not only a tourism mandate. I get all of that. But the reason why I've been pushing this is that the minister himself talked about signage on iconic heritage sites in last year's budget speech. So it's not like they say they're washing their hands of it. They accept that there's a stakeholders engagement, if you want to look at it. Tourism is a stakeholder in this issue. I'd just like to ask one final question, very quick question. I've showed you all now the picture of the sign that does exist for a private golf estate. And there may well be discretion. There would have to have been discretion, and there would have to have been latitude in order to allow that sign. Otherwise, the sign is illegal. Unless somebody bribed someone, I'm not suggesting that they did, but if it was done legally, there must therefore be some kind of latitude in the relevant legislation or bylaws allowing that sign to be put up there. So my question simply is this. Does the GG, or is he aware, or is anyone in his professional staff here aware of any such latitude that would allow a brown sign on a national road to be erected for a private golf estate, but not for a national iconic heritage site like the Nelson Mandela Capture Site? Surely if there's latitude, the latitude would encompass what I think we all want, and not be so narrow as to say, these rules apply to everybody, but private golf estates can have a brown sign. There's got to be latitude if that sign was allowed, and surely the latitude would encompass something like what we're asking for. And I just want to ask the DG, is that his understanding of the discretion or the latitude that is applicable?
Honorable Chairperson, I'm not aware, but I stand to be corrected as I'm not necessarily in charge of that particular piece of legislation in terms of implementation, but I'm not aware of that discretion. And perhaps just to provide clarity also on the budget vote statement 2015. It was with reference to the nature of signage she was talking about, the interpretive. We don't purely exonerate ourselves from assisting where signage is required. That's a separate, but that specific specific input that was made referred to the signage, that the interpretive signage that we've been doing, whether it's in Robben Island, whether it's in we did it largely in the different heritage sites. So I'm saying this, honorable members, just so that for purposes of this record, we clarified that particular aspect. But it doesn't mean that things that would be able, signage that would be able to assist in bringing volumes into prime sites like the one that we are talking about is something that we can just stand aside and say we're not purely involved. But that specific input referred to the interpretive signage. So that's... then... yes, indeed. So, Robert Jefferson. Funding, the fiscal environment, I don't want to go too much into it. The Minister of Finance will be doing his... Robert Jefferson... I was saying I didn't want to. I think I would refrain from going into the MTech related output. But suffice to say that we are all aware that we are working in a fiscally constrained environment. We'll be happy not to be cut. I would rather leave it there, just because. The Minister of Finance is going to give the total picture of who gets what and rural tourism high on the agenda. I will just use two examples in the oceans economy. Two of the nodes. We have a node in that area there around Kwantlebo Elingana. The top part of it is Mangaliso on the other side. We need not it necessary, but we need the access to the attraction, and we need the access to the sea, and so on. There will be ways of working around those kinds of things. They are our partners. Environmental affairs is really a sister department. We work very closely. So closely, some. The DG says, no, we shouldn't see ourselves that way. We should see ourselves as a department that has got a very important mandate. But suffice to say, yes, indeed, we come from there. And even in the enterprise development space, the things that we're doing them in the rural areas. Quite a lot of those things. So if you look at the incubator in Moruleng, it even has within that space a pilot around homestays that we're trying to look into. So there's tangible focus that we're actually dedicating towards that space. And we are hoping that as we intensify the work around the nodes, then we will be able to actually see a bit of scale. Abu Jefferson, thank you.
Thank you very much, DG and the team. That was quite a marathon, and at times we put in situations, but we have to at times. And that's why you're a DG, and that's why you've got a team working with you. I beg your That's why you've got a team that assists you. Thank you very much. I think I will be seeing you for the annual report soon, because by what date? No. I'm saying by what date must
no
the BRRR, by when must we be ready with the recommendations?
For the 30th.
Yeah. 30th October, we must be ready with our BRRRs and whatever. So on that note, thank you very much, Honourable Krumbok. Don't go, please. Yeah. Thank you very much. Otherwise, the department.